Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, Jim Potts back on the air. I just want to say thank you for sharing your Sunday with me, be it live or listening to an archive show. Either way, I do appreciate you taking your time to listen. And I hope that you find this very entertaining, but I also hope you find it very informative, which is truly what my goal is. Okay, today we're going to be talking about cyber attacks. We're going to be talking about hackers along with that. We're also going to be talking about the unfortunate incident that happened in Toronto a few days ago, along with some of the events that, quite frankly, happened over the weekend as well. These situations are becoming more and more tragic and about the way that's impacting people's lives. At any rate, you know, before I forget, let me just tell you, I get calls apparently, and sometimes I'm kind of glancing out these windows here and looking at the mountains, so I may miss the call coming in, so just try calling back. I'm here for you, all right? So I want to make sure that you get your questions or your comments on the air, all right? Okay, great. All right, you know, I always like to start out by talking about some emails that I received, and I want to start out because if you remember right on the last show, I put it out there regarding this business about abolishing ICE, and I really wanted some comments. And, well, I got what I asked for. Let's put it that way. One individual, John from Pennsylvania, his response was a little bit more aggressive, I think. But I'm trying to be, you know, fair and, you know, with these. So I'm going to put some of the negative stuff on, some of the more positive things as well. So I don't want people to think that I'm not being fair out there. Anyway, John from Pennsylvania seems to feel that ICE, he's comparing it to Gestapo-type of tactics. And they're not trying to make America great again by their actions. And that he feels that they, in fact, should be abolished. And he doesn't like the fact that these, you know, about the situation at the borders with the babies, et cetera. I know there's been a lot of things on the news about that and how this administration and the judges are making certain things happen. It's unfortunate. There's no doubt about it. It's unfortunate all the way around. But I'm not sure personally that that's ICE's fault. I think that they've been given a mandate about some of the things that they need to do. And I think they're going about it as best they can. I mean, the image out there might be sometimes looking kind of bad, but I can't speak to how the media also portrays some of that. You know, if you really are open-minded to some of this, John, you will actually see where, you know, the media, you know, I had a student one time to tell me if it bleeds, it reads. So sometimes I think the media has a way of showing the worst of things, the things that get people's emotions going. The more positive things maybe we don't always get to see. So I appreciate you sending me in your email, John. I don't personally believe that they use Gestapo tactics, but you certainly are entitled to your opinion. And then I got one from Emily. Emily from Michigan, she kind of feels they are needed. She feels that they do help out, you know, with our borders from those trying to get into our country to harm us. She says, I understand the situation about, you know, she uses the terminology illegal, so let me just let you know that that's her terminology, not mine. But they're only a part of the problem, according to Kathy. Kathy seems to feel that we need some kind of agency that's out there to help protect us. And she points out that it's not just about, you know, people coming across our borders for a better life. She also points out here that there's people that she believes are actually coming here with the intent of possibly harming us. So with that in mind, we certainly have to respect that opinion as well. So, Emily, thank you very much for sending this in. Appreciate your opinion. I stopped there because we have a number of emails that came in, and they're pretty much consistent with the two that I just gave you. I mean, you either love them or you hate them. That's just really the bottom line. So at any rate, hopefully these politicians will all figure this out and get this thing on the right course, and we don't have to be discussing this. Okay, another email that came in that I thought that I would share with you. had to do with the, and I don't know if you're aware of this or not out there. Some of you probably are, but this person from Peter, actually Peter's from Hawaii, and Peter sent something into me from the about the courts that made a decision in Hawaii regarding the right to openly carry a gun in public. Now this is very, very impressive, I got to tell you, and he's asking me what my thoughts are on this. Well, I was actually familiar with that because I did see it on the news and I did my little research, as I always do with these things, when people make inquiries of me. But I'll tell you what it is, for those of you who did not hear about this. The Ninth Court Circuit of Appeals, and that's the one that governs everything kind of on the West Coast, Federal Appeals Court ruled on Tuesday that the United States Constitution's Second Amendment actually protects the right to openly carry a gun in public for self-defense, rejecting a claim by Hawaii officials that the right only applies to guns kept at home. Now, that's very interesting. So hear me on that. The court said that the Second Amendment actually protects the right to openly carry a gun. Now, that's different, obviously, than concealed weapons. So what does that mean? That means, remember the old expression, pistol packing mama? So I guess if you've got it on the outside versus the inside, the Ninth Court Circuit of Appeals said that that the Hawaii officials, they got it wrong. And it does not apply to just guns being kept at home. So that's interesting. Now, look, the Ninth Court Circuit of Appeals, just for you to know, is a three-court panel. And they were actually split on that 2-1. Now, is what happened was the Sixth United States Circuit Court interpreted the Second Amendment this way also. And they could also set the issue on a path towards the United States Supreme Court, which has not taken up a major gun rights case since 2010. You know what, folks? This is coming. And I know that the current administration has talked about certain things as well. Now, this all has to do with the extent of a right, you know, to gun ownership. And you know that that's one of the most hotly contested debates in the United States right now. Because why? Obviously because of mass shootings have become commonplace, you know, sadly to say. Now, I will tell you that one of the judges, you know, that spoke up and said, hey, we do not take lightly the problem of gun violence. He also stated, but for better or for worse, the Second Amendment does protect the right to carry a firearm in public for self-defense. This is huge. And I want to tell you, for those of you that don't know the difference between what the Ninth Court Circuit of Appeals is, normally their thought processes, let's just say, are a lot more liberal. So for them to interpret, you know, this situation with this particular case by this individual who bought it, I guess is what happened was that the individual that originally bought the case was denied a right to carry openly permit. So I don't want you to think that that just means in Hawaii now that everybody can just run out and slap a gun on their side. You have to still apparently apply for the permit to be able to openly carry. And, of course, you already know that you have to apply for a consent to carry a concealed weapon. So this is going to be very interesting to see how this turns out, because I will tell you, in 2016, the Ninth Court Circuit had ruled that the Second Amendment does not guarantee a right to carry concealed firearms in public. Okay? So, you know, and again, I'll repeat that. Does not guarantee a right to carry concealed firearms in public. So we have the difference here with the same court. In one case, they're saying, okay, openly carry is one thing, but a concealed is something different. So remember, concealed weapons are still going to be problematic. The open carry situation with this particular case is that they can do it, but just remember that the facts of this case also somewhat dictated that he still has, the gentleman who had appealed this, is still going to have to apply for a permit in order to be able to openly carry. Now, you know, there's some states, you know, I know Texas and I think it is Nevada. There's a lot of these states that already have these issues, making it abundantly clear that their citizens have a right to openly carry. So this is going to be interesting. Now, the laws on openly carrying firearms vary widely by state. But remember, it's also by the type of gun. Now, let's talk about the most restrictive. The most restrictive are California, which falls under the Ninth Court Circuit of Appeals jurisdiction. Florida, Illinois, and the District of Columbia, they generally prohibit people from openly carrying any sort of firearm And that probably makes sense, especially for Washington, D.C. Now, let me finish this off by stating in 2008, the United States Supreme Court ruled for the first time that the Second Amendment protects an individual's right to keep guns at home for self-defense. At home. So just to be clear, at home. You know, most people don't even know when the Second Amendment was adopted, but let me tell you something. It was adopted way back in 1789. And, of course, the people against the Second Amendment always want to state that, you know, back then when they came up with this, they didn't realize, you know, that the times would be changing, et cetera, and that it's an antiquated amendment that possibly needs to be changed. But that 1789 amendment stated very clearly that a well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Well, you know, again, that's the standard language that everybody always claims on this. So whether you're a gun advocate, not a gun advocate, the Ninth Court Circuit of Appeals coming out with this one, this is very, very interesting. And I don't know. Let's just see where it goes from there. I will keep you posted on any other changes to that. But remember, this was Hawaii, guys. Don't run around thinking it's okay out here. And I don't want people in Hawaii thinking that now it's going to become, you know, gun-toting city, you know, gun-toting islands, because we haven't reached that yet. Okay. I got another email that I thought that I would share real quick also, and that had to do with anthrax. A person sent in an email, and it was Susan from Maryland, and asking whether or not, you know, the anthrax is a form of terrorism. And that issue was a number of years ago now, and we really haven't heard anything about it. And have I heard anything else, you know, since that time? Well, to be perfectly honest with you, no, I've not heard anything. This goes back quite a few years at this point. And I can tell you that there was a doctor that was actually sending around the anthrax. He had a number of issues, I guess, that concerned him. I believe he sent it to some politicians, et cetera. If you remember right, the post office, they were all wearing, you know, rubber gloves and all kinds of things, which you really couldn't blame them. But this Dr. Ivins, I guess, like I said, he really felt that he was being wrong, so to speak, and then he started sending out all of these things. So everybody doesn't have access to this these type of drugs. So just to let you know that. Because he was a doctor, I guess he did. Now, I can tell you that this goes back way back into, I think it was 2001. So it's not been seen since then, as far as I know. Okay? So, having said that, we are going to move on. I hope that answers your question. But yes, more definitively, it would be a part of terrorism. It's just another form of it. And, you know, terrorism can cover all different forms. This is like a poison. Once again, there's guns, there's bombings. I mean, there's all kinds of different ways. So we shouldn't limit it our scope in terms of, you know, or our thought processes on how, you know, terrorism is defined, just because of the medium by which people create havoc upon other people. Let's put it that way. Okay. So once again, Susan, thank you so much for sending that in, and I hope I've answered your question. Hey, by the way, if you want to give us a call, you can do it at 818-602-4929. Or you can do like these individuals did and send me an email, listenupwithjp@pottsandassociates.com. So that's listenupwithjp@pottsandassociates.com. Or you can call in at 818-602-4929. Okay, hey, let's move on now to start talking about this cyber stuff. You know, it's always amazing to me when I start to get into this, how interesting some of this stuff actually becomes. You know, as Americans, as I stated before, we really just become so complacent with some of this that we really don't venture into the depths of this unless it's something that kind of touches us personally. So part of my fun, quite frankly, with doing this is that I get to look at so many different things, and I love getting statistics, because statistics really speaks to a lot of this. And when I had decided that I was going to do cyber attacks, you know, I will tell you, one of my classmates that I graduated from high school with, he ended up becoming the chief of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Chairman of Chief Joints of Staff, General Martin Dempsey, who's retired now. But I remember my wife and I were at his home while he was sitting in that position, And we went out and visited him with a number of our other classmates. And I remember him specifically saying that one of the things that, and this was under the Obama administration, by the way, but I remember one of the things that he was saying was that the real issue that we also have to be so worried about are cyber attacks. And now look at what's going on in the news. Cyber attacks. People hacking. So let me do this. Let me start off by giving you the four different areas, actually, on how this happens. The cyber crimes, they call it, and I'll be giving you some definitions with that, et cetera, in a little bit here. Cyber espionage, cyber warfare, and hacktivism. I love that word, hacktivism. But at any rate, those are the four areas. So let's go back. Not it's back in time, but it's not really that long ago. So cyber crimes. In October of 2017, 73.4% of all the cyber attacks was cyber crime. In May of 2018, it's up to 81%. So think about that. Cyber crime has gone up from 73.4% to 81% just since last October. And you know, you have to wonder, is technology a part of that? The way that people are being able to get in and to do the things that they're doing. And I swear, I think people are putting too much information about themselves out there as well. But that's maybe another issue for another time. Now, let's talk about cyber espionage. I'm just giving statistics right now. Like I said, I'll go through this a little bit more in detail. But on cyber espionage in October of 2017, the statistics were 21.3% of all the cyber attacks. Or cyber espionage is 21.3%. But in May of 2018, those numbers were cut in half almost. It's down to 10.3%. So the espionage side of it's down. Cybercrime is up. Espionage is down. The next one is cyber warfare. Now, that sounds like something for the military, et cetera. So that's very interesting. But in October 2017, cyber warfare, 1.1%. That's a low percentage. But guess what? May 2018, it's now up to 5.2. That's a big increase. That's a big increase. The last one is hacktivism. October 2017, 4.3% of all cyber attacks had to do with hacking. That number, what do you think? Gone up, gone down? You're right. It's gone down. 3.4%. 3.4%. Now, these are startling numbers here all the way around with some of this, but the biggest thing is cyber crime. Cyber crime is going up. So let's do this, all right? Let's talk about the differences of what some of these things are. Because once again, when I looked at this, I'm like, you know, cyber attacks, cyber attacks. But what does all this mean? Well, first of all, let's start off with cyber crime, since cyber crime is the one where the majority of this, you know, is coming from. Now, just keep in mind that cyber crime, it's kind of a computer-oriented crime. And it's a crime that involves computers and networks. Now, the computer may have been used in the commission of a crime, or it also may be the target. So keep that in mind. The commission of a crime or the computer itself may be the target. And cyber crimes, for those of you who do not know, let me define it for you. Offenses that are committed against individuals or groups of individuals with a criminal motive to intentionally harm the reputation of the victim or cause physical or mental harm or loss to the victim directly or indirectly using modern telecommunication networks such as the Internet. Hey, 30 years ago, did we have any of this? Also, mobile phones as well. So you got to factor all that into this technology. And now we have a whole thing called cybercrime. Now, look, cybercrime, it can threaten a person or even a nation's security and financial health. Think about it if they get in there. Now, when you start thinking about this, threatening a person or nation's security, is this what's going on with the Russian situation? I don't know. This, to me, might fit in there. Again, I'm not trying to get off into that tangent. But the issues surrounding these types of crimes have become high profile, particularly those surrounding hacking, copyright infringement, unwarranted mass surveillance, sextortion, child pornography, and child grooming, they're calling it. And there's also problems of privacy when confidential information is intercepted or disclosed, lawfully or otherwise. So this is very interesting in terms of how this all breaks down. And, I will say that my wife is one that's always very conscientious about our information getting out there and the things that we do. Because who wants to be hacked? Who wants their identity stolen? I mean, we hear from time to time on the news about some of these major corporations that, in fact, are being hacked, and all of that information out there, millions of Americans and other individuals, quite frankly, I shouldn't just call them Americans, who may have been a part of the business that had given their all of their information, and now that information is all out there. I don't know. Anyway, so that's the cybercrime piece. And by the way, they did a report that estimates that the annual damage to the global economy is at $445 billion. $445 billion is the annual damage on the global economy because of cybercrime. Mm. However, there was a Microsoft report, actually, that was survey-based that estimates are hopelessly flawed and exaggerated, they say. But the true losses are less than that, approximately $1.5 billion. Look, this is still a whole lot of money, no matter how you cut it. And the reality is that this is something that's going to have to be brought under control. And that's why we have to depend on our IT people, et cetera, to watch out, and make sure that we, in fact, are, covering our bases. Even our office, we're super careful about all of that because we have information that we're protecting on behalf of our clients. We've got our systems, secured and resecured and everything else just to make sure nobody can get in there. Now, let's talk about another one called Hacktivision. So just to give you an idea about that. And if anybody has any comments or questions that they have on this, give me a call, 818-602-4929, if you've got any special knowledge about any of this. Now, Hacktivision and the Internet Activision, it's the subversive use of computers and computer networks to promote a political agenda or a social change. With roots in hacker culture and hacker ethics, its ends are often related to the free speech, human rights, or freedom of information movements. Now, believe it or not, this term was originally coined way back in 1994 by a cult of the dead cow, it was called. The members known as Omega, in an email to the group. Due to the variety of meanings of its root words, hacktivism is sometimes ambiguous, and there exists significant disagreement over the kinds of activities and purposes it encompasses. And it's also, as I told you, it's related to cyber terrorism. So I don't know. We hear about people being hacked and the rest of that, people being hacked at a very low level. Like I said, we got to depend on our IT people to make sure that we, in fact, are covering our bases. Let's just put it that way. There's been some notable hacktable events, by the way. 1990, the Hong Kong Blondes helped Chinese citizens get access to blocked websites by targeting the Chinese computer networks. The group identified holes in the Chinese internet system, particularly in the area of satellite communications. And then there was the leader of the group was called Blondie Wong. It was also described plans to attack American businesses that were actually partnering with China. And I thought I would just mention that one about China because of everything that's going on right now that's out there and all of the issues with the United States and China, et cetera. So I thought I would mention that. So that's the second one. Then they have cyber warfare. Cyber warfare. Okay. Let me just tell you what that is. Cyber warfare is the use or targeting in a battle space or warfare contents of computers, online control systems, and networks. It involved both offensive and defensive operations pertaining to the threat of cyber attacks, espionage, and sabotage. Now, that makes sense to me. So, espionage. How many times have we heard on the news about somebody that's now trying to get into the system and give out information regarding our country? Espionage. Now, there's been a controversy over whether such operations can be called war. And is that really a war? I don't know. There's a war out there. You know, I don't know if that's clearly defined or not. But just keep in mind that nevertheless, powers have been developing cyber capabilities, engaged in cyber warfare, but offensively and defensively, including, by the way, the United States, China, Russia, and the United Kingdom. Now, two other players in this that are getting into this system is Iran, and guess who else? Guess who else? North Korea. Okay. Well, I don't know that those surprise me. And quite frankly, the big boys, which is the U.S., China, and Russia, let's face it, you know, nothing would surprise me about what these guys are doing and not doing, but you got to stay ahead of the curve for sure. Now, I can tell you that apparently there was a number of cyber wars definitions that have been proposed, with no single definition being widely adopted internationally. But some have just said it's actions by a nation state to penetrate another nation's computers or networks for the purpose of causing damage or disruption. Now, you tell me, does that sound familiar? Is there anything going on in the news right now regarding that one? All you got to do is watch the news. Here we go with the Russian hacking again. So, you know, it's out there. This business is definitely serious, without a doubt. Now, we also have what we call cyber spying or cyber espionage. And that's an act or practice of obtaining secrets and information without the permission and knowledge of the holder of the information from individuals, competitors, rivals, groups, governments, and enemies for personal, economic, political, or military advantage using methods on the internet, networks, or individual computers through the use of proxy servers, cracking techniques and malicious software, including, you might remember this, Trojan horses and spyware. It may be wholly be perpetrated online from computer desks of professionals on bases in faraway countries, or may involve infiltration at home by computers, by computer-trained conventional spies and moles, or in other cases, by criminal handiwork of amateur malicious hackers and software programmers. Man, this sounds like something off of out of a movie, but I guess that's where these movies come from. They base it on these things. Now, I will tell you that the cyber spying typically involves the use of such access to secrets and classified information or control of individual computers or whole networks for strategic advantage and for psychological, political, and physical subversion activities and sabotage. All right. Now, I will tell you also that more recently, the cyber spying involves analysis of public activity on social networking sites like Facebook and Twitter. You know, Facebook has been going through a whole lot of things here lately, that's for sure. Okay, at any rate, I hope that that was, you know, somewhat informative. And again, if anybody has any questions or comments, you know, regarding this and the hacking and cyber espionage, etc., give me a call at 818-602-4929. And so if you have any comments that you want to share, etc., that would be absolutely fantastic. Okay. Now, I think next week is what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you the 10 most destructive hacker attacks in the past 20 years. I think it would be kind of fun to go through that, so I'll share some information with you next week. Unless I have time today. If I have time today, I'll try and get to it. If not, that'll keep you on the edge of your seats until next week. Now, let's move on. I wanted to talk about the Toronto massacres. All right? You know, this business about terrorism. You know, every day on the news, it really does seem like, you know, this stuff is just not going away. I don't think it's going to. You know what? We got a call coming in. Let me handle this call before I get into this new area. Hi, you're live on the air with Jim Potts on LA Talk Radio. Do you have a question or comment to share?
Yes, I do. Hi. This is Jim from the East Coast.
Hey, Jim, how you doing?
Good. My comment is on the cyber attacks. What bothers me most about this is that not enough people in this country take it seriously as a serious threat. I mean, as you and I are talking, Russians could be hacking into our systems as we speak. And it, it bothers me that our administration, current administration, doesn't take it seriously either.
Okay. And why do you think that they don't take it seriously?
Well, it's a good question. It's a good question because it's a subject of an investigation. And I think that, you know, something has to be done. And in fact, this administration has not done anything to try to prevent the hacking. They've been allocated millions of dollars, and nothing has been spent yet on any plan or any program. They have no plan in place.
Okay. Well, let me just back up for a second just to be clear, because I don't think that this is a new issue. I remember under the Obama administration, obviously, which is the previous administration, and I remember seeing some news clips out there where apparently our former president was made aware of some of this. And did they take it serious as well? I mean, is this from a political standpoint that maybe it's too much of a hot potato? So everybody's pointing fingers? I mean, I don't know. You have to look at this. Now, I will tell you, as I stated earlier, one of my high school buddies who I graduated with, he told me, and this one is when he was in his position under the Obama administration, he told me in his living room that cyber attacks are a big issue. So I guess is what I would have to say is that are we talking about this administration, former administration, maybe the administration before this? This can't be new. This stuff with cyber and hacking, this stuff is going back now for years. So are our politicians sitting on their hands?
I think it's progressed to a point now where something really has to be done, because it's not just interfering in elections. That's bad enough. But if they can do that, they can interfere in other things, our power grids, our nuclear capabilities, our computers to control our nuclear capabilities. You know, there's with today's technology, you know, maybe there's no limit to what they can get into. That's why this issue has to be taken more seriously than it is.
I don't think anybody's going to disagree with that one. You know, the sad part about this is that we're just a common folk, and the realities are these guys are never going to tell us what's happening with any of this stuff. But, you know, sometimes we don't know what's going on behind the scene as well. I agree with you. It appears that this has been an issue that needs to be addressed. And I look at our politicians, not just who's sitting in the Oval Office. I'm talking about some of these senators that are out there and these congressmen are out there. I mean, what are they doing to push this agenda? I don't think this is an issue for any one person that's in Washington, D.C., I think they all need to pick up the banner on this thing. You know what, Jim? It's also like the issue about gun control. I mean, I'm not switching subjects on you, but it seems like whatever is the hot-button topic for the day, these guys are addressing that right at the moment, and then they move on. It's almost like they have such a long list of things to do that they don't take the time to resolve any one of these major issues. I mean, do you agree or disagree with that?
Well, Bud, you know a lot of those politicians are in the pockets of the NRA.
Well, here we go.
They get a lot of donations from them, and you know that's a fact. Well, the NRA is in hot water right now on a different issue, but
right,
that's part of the problem right there.
Yeah, you know the realities are is that this stuff is controlled by individuals, you know, at a much different level than you and I, and that's true. You know these individuals that are lining pockets and things of that nature, be able to push their own agendas, etc. I can't disagree with the rationale about that. I mean, that's unfortunately the system that we do live in, and I'm not sure that we have any of those answers. And that's why I still point the finger back to Washington, D.C. in general. You know, because look, here's the deal. It doesn't matter what anybody's political affiliation is. The reality is that the issues that you're bringing up today, Jim, those cross the aisle. This involves all politicians, and the realities are these guys are not going to do anything. When they're up for re-election, let's face it, I don't care what side of the aisle you're on. These guys always talk about these things, but what do they actually do when they actually get in office? That's my concern, and I'm not sure it's ever going to be anything like that. You know, I can tell you, I was a history major in college. We were never designed to be a two-party system. You go back in time, you're going to see where there were all kinds of different parties. And just over the decades, Over the century, the last century, all those other parties disappeared, and we're dealing with a two-party system right now. If we could get a stronger political third party in there, and now these guys would all have to work together, I think that's going to help to be a solution to some of this madness that's going on. What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, yeah, that would certainly help. But, I mean, the bottom line is that the two parties have to work together. I mean, I've never seen this country so divided since Vietnam. And until the parties start to work together, I mean, all you're going to have is this adversarial attitude in Washington, them against us. And you have one party blocking the other party wanting to do something, and then another party blocks the other party. It's no wonder nothing gets done.
Yeah, well, I can't disagree with you about that, Jim. We're in a sad state of affairs. There's so much political divisiveness that's going on right now. And even when you turn around and look at what's going on, even what they talk about with these midterm elections, man, I tell you, it's almost like it's going to be scary stuff, because I can envision people almost, I hate to say this, fighting at the polls, man. You know, these groups, these protesters, I don't care what side you're on. There's going to be people out there fighting to get their side of this across to the other side. And there's not going to be any solution to this anytime soon. It's just sad, you know. So at any rate, okay, well, Jim.
What is it going to take? Is it going to take a foreign government to attack our power grids, and one day the power goes off all over the country? Is that what it's going to take for those politicians to do something?
You know, I keep hearing about solar flares. What would happen if a solar flare did something? That would take out everything also. But you're right, Jim. I don't disagree with you. You know, I get it. You know, I get it. You know, one of the reasons why I'm on the air in the first place is because of the fact that I'm trying to keep people informed and keep people's awareness levels up. Because
you do a good job of it.
I appreciate that. I believe when I tell you, I am trying very, very hard in this area. And, you know, we have to pay attention to what's going on out there and stop just letting it be that it was something that hits the news today. And then a week from now, they're moving on to something else. And that's the bad part about it. So,
but this issue is not going away anytime soon. The cyber attacks. Well, they just had over the weekend Senator McCaskill.
Right.
They tried to hack into her system, her computer.
Yeah. Jim. Hey, I don't disagree with you. I don't disagree with you. And you know, again, this is all part of not only domestic terrorism, but what you're talking about is also international terrorism on a different level. All of this fits into the same scheme of things that I've been talking about. Just on a different level, that's all. Hey, Jim, I really appreciate you calling in. I really do.
You're welcome.
If you get anything else on this or anytime you feel like calling and discussing this, you know, I'm here for you, buddy. So thank you so much.
I will. Keep up the good work.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Take care.
Bye. Okay. That was Jim from Back East calling. And I always appreciate people calling in for sure. This Toronto massacre situation that I was talking about, you know, once again, this is sad, and I've always preaching to people about being careful out there, you know, and it brings up this issue about the sharp increase in gun violence. Now, apparently in Toronto, they're grappling with a sharp rise in gun violence this year. Deaths from gun violence in that city of Toronto jumped 53%. You know, from 26% in 2018, from the same period last year, and this is serious. Now, we have to understand about this gun violence things, and I understand that. But you know, Canada also had an influx of people coming in. Now, for those of you that don't know about this recent shooting, is that the shooter actually shot 14. Fortunately, only one person got killed, and I hate to say fortunately because the family of the one obviously is devastated by this, but 14 other people got injured. So, you know, it's sad. You know, it's like the gentleman was just saying from back east, we've got to get a handle on some of these things. The cyber piece of this is one thing. Gun control, this is a whole different country, but the issue that happened in Toronto, hey, it happens here as well. As a matter of fact, what did I see on the news this morning? We had another shooting. This shooting, three were killed at the scene down in Louisiana. You know, gunfire broke out about 8:30 p.m. outside of a chicken and watermelon restaurant. Now, chicken and watermelon, there's a combination for you. At any rate, it was in New Orleans, and apparently two individuals wearing hooded-style clothing, one had a handgun, and see, the other one had a shotgun. Now, see, everything that we've talked about so far has to do with automatic weapons. The shotgun is not an automatic rifle by far. I mean, it's something completely different. And like I said, there's three dead, seven injured. And, you know, apparently this was done in a drive-by type of fashion. Now, they're thinking that these two hooded-style individuals, that this may have been something personal, but they don't know, you know, quite frankly, yet, because they're still looking for them. And they're asking people to, in fact, you know, give out any information that they can. Now, you know, one of the things that I touched on last week very briefly, because I got an email regarding the LGBTQ community and whether or not some of the things that happen to people based on sexual orientation could be possibly, you know, is that another form of domestic terrorism? And my answer is yes. Hold on now. Let's see. We're getting another call here. So let me go ahead and click in. Hi, you're live on the air with Jim Potts on LA Talk Radio. Do you have a question or a comment to share?
Well, I guess I have a question and a comment. I'm calling from Minnesota. Not necessarily trying to derail your conversation in regards to Louisiana and the shooting that just happened there. But my preliminary question deals with, you know, is it your belief that, you know, these types of attacks that are maybe directed towards gays and lesbians should be classified as domestic terrorism as well? Because there was a significant and horrific attack back in 1973 in Louisiana, and that's what just reminded me of that. It was a worse attack on gays and lesbians in the country prior to Orlando. So I just was wondering in regards to your thoughts in regards to that.
Well, you know, actually, we don't even have to go back that far, just to let you know. And I'll address that one because I'm familiar with the one that you're talking about. But we don't have to go back that far. We could talk about August 28th of 2017. It was a gay man that was beaten by these guys, and they shouted homophobic, you know, slurs at him, and he suffered a broken jaw from the attack. And do I think that that's a form of domestic terrorism? Absolutely. Anytime you have any type of extremism, and you can't say toward any one group anymore because some of these people in domestic terror, they're attacking everybody. Now, in September of 2017, there was a transgender teenager who was stabbed to death and mutilated by three young people in southern Missouri. So, you know, 1973 is one thing, but now we're talking about these things that, in fact, are more recent than that. Another situation was in November of last year. I don't know if you heard about this one, but there was a 17-year-old gay teenager who was also attacked by an 18-year-old. And, you know, he did all kinds of things to him, made him strip off his clothes, et cetera. It was on the news. Well, it's on some of my sites that I deal with, so I don't know if it was on the general news, but, you know, January of this year, you know, there was a situation where there was an openly gay, you know, Jewish college student was stabbed more than 20 times. And, you know, and he was, in fact, an avowed neo-Nazi. Now, what does that tell you? That definitely, when you start talking about domestic terrorism, falls squarely into that situation. So what do I think? I think you're absolutely correct. And I think that some of this, you know, definitely is a form of domestic terrorism. Anytime somebody is trying to instill fear to push their ideologies on other people, whether it's for political reasons, religious reasons, it doesn't matter the reason. Once they do this, to me, it falls into the category of domestic terrorism, even when you have one individual that's engaging in this kind of behavior. Now, what I believe you're talking about was the upstairs lounge fire. That was way back in 1973, and there was 32 deaths as a result of that. Most people, once again, I always mention the fact that we have a tendency to forget. We become too complacent. Unless we're the ones that are actually impacted personally by this, you know, in a week, we're moving on to something else in our daily lives and end of story. But the issue that you're bringing up about the LGBT community is a very important one, in my opinion, because I do think that there has been an ongoing issue regarding people taking adverse actions against them because of their sexual orientation. Now, I will tell you, though, that the upstairs lounge that you're talking about was the name of it. was actually, I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but it was actually the Metropolitan Community Church had just finished a worship service, and they were hosting like a social event is what was going on. Now, apparently, so you were there. Okay, so it was like 125 people there, and it dwindled down to about 60 people. But now, when you say that you believe it was an attack on the gay people, I got to tell you honestly, the facts that I've gathered on this is that the individual who did this. So just for the it sounds like you're familiar with it, but let me make my listeners aware of this as well. And as what happened was, there was an individual that had been in the club that night that had gotten into a confrontation in the club and got thrown out of the club. Now, he was also a member of the gay community, and then he got upset that he got thrown out of the club, because apparently to get into the club, they had a special door, and you ring the buzzer, and because it's an upstairs situation, that's why they call it the upstairs lounge. So all they would do is just go ahead and ring the buzzer, and the door would just, you'd be able to get in the door. So it was somebody that was familiar with the process. So basically, what happened, from what I understand, is that he pressed the buzzer, the door was open, and then he took a can of lighter fluid and set the stairs on fire that led upstairs. That's what happened. Now, I will tell you, and you probably are aware of this, but I'm really, this is for the benefit of the listeners, that nobody was ever convicted of that. And the individual who, in fact, that they had interviewed for it, he ended up committing suicide like a year or so later, but never confessed of being the one that did this. They suspected him, but they couldn't prove it was him because there was nobody there to visually see it. So I don't know. You'd indicated that, you thought it was an attack on a gay club. I would say that it was an attack on a club, and the membership was gay. There's no doubt about that. But whether or not it was a gay attack, per se, I don't know. I don't know if that would be correct. What do you think about that when you look at it from that perspective? I'm saying.
Well, I'm very familiar with the facts in regards to the upstairs lounge.
Okay.
And if it was clear that this was a person that engaged in that conduct and started the fire, you would expect that the police would have been able to arrest the individual and charge them and have them convicted. So the fact that didn't happen, we can't just presume that that's the person that did it.
Well,
they're the suspect.
Let's be clear.
Right?
Let's be clear. Okay, the facts that the police have was that first of all, there was no eyewitnesses. Okay, they only suspected it was him because he was the one that had been in a confrontation that night. But you just can't convict him on that just because he had a confrontation that night. So because nobody, it was not like there was a guard at the door that said and pointed at this individual and said, this is him. So because of the fact that they couldn't prove it was him that way and there was no witnesses, that would be speculation at best. That's the problem. But look, let's look at the real deal here. The real deal here is that people died, unfortunately, by an act like this. And is that act itself domestic terrorism for whatever reason? I would fully agree with you. The Pulse nightclub, in Orlando, Florida, what was that, 2016 now, I guess, as time moves on, was that a situation where it was an attack on gays? Well, the individual that was going in that had created, oh, by the way, let me back up for a second. The other issue I had with that, by the way, those facts on the Louisiana club, one exit. Here we go again with one exit. I don't understand these clubs that have one exit for people. I really don't. I mean, you would think that the fire marshals or somebody that comes around and does those inspections, some of the people, from what I understand, tried to get out. But guess what? Because it was in this particular location in Louisiana, they had bars on the windows. So not only did they only have one exit, but they had bars in the windows. How could people possibly get out of there under those circumstances? And that's also the sad part to it. Now, go ahead.
Here's one more thing I want you to consider in that, okay, and during that time frame too, is that this point in American history, police were raiding clubs where gay people were congregated. It wasn't necessarily something that was legal for them to be able to do. So not at all saying that it was appropriate and a smart thing for them to only have one exit, but trying to care for the patrons and not have them get arrested every time they go out and have their name in the newspapers for them to lose their jobs and their livelihood, was always something that was in the front of either a patron's mind that was interested in going to one of these locations, or the owner of the establishment that was trying to provide a safe venue for gays and lesbians to congregate and meet each other.
You know what? That's the sad part. And I don't disagree. If we go back in time, just in American history, you know, what were people from all these different ethnic groups doing? Like, if you had blacks that were doing what? Meeting secretly. You could look at the Chinese, you know, you could look at the Irish, you know, so many of these groups that had to meet secretly because of the fact that they were being ostracized, you know, by whoever. So I don't disagree with your rationale, as well. But I want to make one more comment before we get off the air, because I've only got a minute left to go. You know what I dislike the most? Let me tell you. They actually now have tours. They've made a tourist attraction out of that tragedy. That I don't like. Because why would you make money off of somebody's misgivings like that? I don't agree with that at all. But they actually conduct tours down there now. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That site is now a tourist attraction, believe it or not, in Louisiana. But at any rate, look, I really do appreciate you calling in. And do I think it's a form of domestic terrorism? I really honestly do. When you treat people of any group, not just this group, but any group, where you're just trying to instill fear and trying to push your ideologies on them, and you do it by methods like these, I think it's wrong. Hey, thank you very much for calling. I really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for your show. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Bye. All right. You've been listening to Jim Potts at LA Talk Radio. It's time to close out the show, but let me remind you that you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/JimPottsAuthor. Hey, be sure to join me. You know, I didn't get a chance to finish this. We had a couple really good shows or callers in today, so I really appreciated that. I didn't get a chance to talk about the active shooters tips that I wanted to give out this week. So guess what? Once again, you have to sit on the edge of your seats until next week. All right? Thanks again. But until then, I want you to be aware, I want you to be vigilant, and I want you to be safe. Have a good week. Bye.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.